Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the SOMTV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. I hope everyone's having a very nice holidays with their family. I hope you're drinking something great. On today's episode, Claire Copey and I are going to go through our top wines of 2023. So our favorite, top, best, sort of all combined. And yeah, this was a tough one to figure out. We drink a lot of wine here at SOMTV, so that's going to be a very fun episode. Before we get to that, today's episode is brought to you by Napa Valley Vintners. We're on SOMTV.com right now. You can watch a vintage report for 2023, where some of the greatest winemakers in Napa sit down, talk about the challenges, and how great that vintage came together. 2023 is shaping up to be one of the best vintages in Napa history. So get a little insider trading on SOMTV.com right now by watching that. And if you want to know more about Napa and Napa's vintage report and their harvests, go to NapaVintners.com. They have everything you could need right there. Without further ado, Claire and I talking about the 2023 best wines of the year. Claire, it's great to have you back on, back in your home, the SOMTV podcast. Welcome home. You feel good? Do you feel good about, can we talk 2023 before we do best wines, top wines, favorite wines?
Yeah.
How was 2023 for you?
I honestly love 2023. I know a lot of people had a rough time, but like I'm lucky as shit. Like everything's coming up Claire 2023. No, it was a great year. It was a great year. I'm very lucky to do what I do with this team. And that's why I love like doing this episode with you, is because it really makes you reflect back and you're like, damn, we are just so dang lucky to like, number one, drink the wines that we drink, but like drink those wines with some really freaking amazing people, you know?
Yeah, no, you're right. I was going to say this year sucked, but you...
It did and it didn't for you.
You threw a shot of positivity in my arm, and you're right.
But dude, you had the release of this amazing film. Like,
this is true. This is true.
That's huge.
This is true. Half the people listening to this are cursing, going, I can't see it because I'm not in New York or LA or one of the places that it's played. But we are going to announce the digital release. But you're right. This film is a long time coming. And we'll be talking about another film coming with one of my picks. All right, you're right. 2023 was fine. It was a fine year. It was a good year.
It was a fine year.
It was a fine year. It was a weird year for wine, though.
In what way?
Well, it just seemed calmer. You know, there wasn't a lot of big things happening. Yeah. You know, a couple wineries were bought, things like that. But it wasn't like, it just felt quieter to me. I don't know.
I can see that. We also, I mean, you did more than me, but as far as like traveling for work, I feel like it was a little quieter. So we weren't out there, you know, like
that's right,
on the ground. Well, we did, but
obviously one of my picks is from a film that is coming in early 2024. Mm. And that I had to travel to go film. There's been a lot of travel with the film, you know, a Cup of Salvation. So yeah. Okay. 2023, you were fine. You were okay. So here's what we're going to do. We do this every year. We pick I would say this leans heavier on our favorites than best, because best wines, frankly, that's a tough call, you know, as far as like what that actually means. But if you mix best, favorite, and most impactful, I think if you take those three things, that's where you get my picks here. Some of these I've talked about, some I haven't. But so Claire, what I did is I wanted to make it, instead of just let's list our four favorite wines, I wanted to do it this way. We're going to pick a red. We're going to pick a white. Mm-hmm. We're going to pick a sparkling, a white or rosé, mm-hmm. something like that, a sparkling. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to pick a wild card, which could be anything. Okay. Could be fortified, could be another red, it could be whatever. And the reason is I don't want to end up, I want some variation in here and put these into categories. You okay with that?
I'm okay with that. I've got lots to pick from.
And I think that most of these should be able to be attached to content or something where people can see what the hell we're talking about.
We have a lot of good stuff that we got to drink this year when you look back on it, you know?
We did. Do you want to start with red or white?
Let's start with red.
Red, okay.
Let's
you start with your favorite or best or most impactful red. Now realize, before you get into this, we drink a hell of a lot of wine. I mean, this is like a lot, but we also drink a lot of the same wine. You know, it's like when you get into this mode of like, you know, I'm known for drinking a lot of Matthias and Rosé and just nonstop drinking that wine,
which I don't, that's a great wine.
I don't regret, you know, but it makes it tough to put that on my list. One day we should have wines we drink the most of list.
Oh yeah,
and that would
I think
be,
it would surprise people. I think it would surprise people.
Oh, definitely.
Like, I know the rosé that you constantly have in your house would surprise people. That's just like in a mug and you're like, welcome.
I know. Well, you know, you'd be shocked. You don't make a ton of money making documentary films. So you drink what you can afford on a, yeah, that's on a good daily rosé. Basis. Yeah, it is. All right. Okay. What is your red? Your number one red? Your favorite, most impactful
number one? Yeah, this is one that just stands out for me, and it's one of my best and one of my favorite. And it was a wine that we were all blind tasted on while we were up in Napa shooting by Armin.
I got this wrong.
And we all got it wrong because we all thought it was Pinot Noir. And it's Gamay. It's Gamay. I have a bottle right here, actually, because I purchased some because I loved it so much. And it's Megan. It's Megan Zobeck's Gamay. And it's from her own label. She's winemaker at Burgess, as we know. Big favorite on Somme TV. She was on Sparklers and almost beat me. But she beats everybody with this Gamay. Like, this is probably the, I think I can say, yeah, it's the best Gamay I've ever had. It is so good. It's, with the exception of, like, I think I had, like, an old Gamay. And yeah, this is coming from, like, Beaujolais, too. And I've had some.
Some guy in France just died on a cobblestone street and doesn't know why. You just killed a man.
It's just, it's because it was so unexpected, you know? Like, I expect incredible Gamay from some of those, you know, Beaujolais crews and from other places in the world, too. I've had some great Gamay from Santa Barbara. But this one just surprised me. And it's just, like, serious. It's beautiful. It's elegant.
What did Meg pay you to say this? Because I want to know.
I was going
to
say, that's so mean, though. It's a great Gamay. What the heck, mean? You know?
Look, first of all, there are two
things. I don't care.
I love, Megan Zobeck is one of my favorite humans. You can't blow her up this big on her first vintage. You can't say she made the best Gamay you've ever had.
I'm going to set the bar so freaking high that she must keep doing it.
All right, hold on, because I know Meg's listening to this right now. Name some Gamays that this is better than.
Okay, well, like, I mean, this isn't fair because now you're like corralling me into this. It's delicious. No, here's the thing. I've had some great freaking Beaujolais in my life, you know, like the benchmark producers, the Dutrebs, they're stunning. They're stunning, wonderful,
but this
wonderful
is better.
Wines. I've had a 1985 Moulin Avant, you know, that was like aged and gorgeous and like beautiful. I think it's because this was so unexpected. It just stands out in my mind.
Right. And
it just stands out to me. And Megan paid me. I'm not going to tell you. I finally got the Ferragamo leather bag.
That's right. First of all, the shit I'm giving you is just really just shit. This wine is absolutely fantastic. And Megan is.
I don't care. Look, I love it. It's the greatest Gamay in the world.
It's her first vintage of this wine that I know of, at least. It is really, truly great. It's fantastic. It's
complex.
But holy shit, is that a we're going to Sizzler take right there? That is hot potato.
Come at me.
Well,
I don't care.
I am coming at you. I love it. I would think. I would wonder if Meg would come at you for that. I think even Meg would say that's too hot for me. Call the police.
Oh,
and
I'm
the fireman.
Sorry.
All right.
Maybe she would. She's like, you're setting me up for failure.
This wine is great. What? M. Zobeck wine, right? It's what it's called. It's really good.
M. Zobeck Gamay Noir from the Barsati Vineyard.
Yeah. Do you know what I called it?
What'd you call
it? When we were blind tasting on it, I thought someone was playing a trick, and I thought it was the wine from Somme 3. I thought it was Raj's Domaine de la Cote.
Oh, yeah. Which is a fantastic Pinot Noir.
But very similar style to this, you know, where it's like, you know, it's very light. I hate to use the word like ethereal, but it kind of is, where it's got that acid point that just is at a perfect place with the fruit and all that stuff. I don't know, but it did taste like a Raj Sashi Mormon wine in a way that I don't mean copying. I just mean that kind of a direction, you know, and that's why I thought that's what it was. So when it turned out to be Gamay and then it turned out to be Meg's wine, I was
very surprised. I hadn't had it yet. So it was just like, incredibly pleasant surprise. Blew my mind.
But that's a pretty good comp. If someone thinks your wine is Domaine de la Cote, it means, you know, you're clearly crafting something,
you're doing something
quite
right.
Delicious. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably the best Gamay ever made, probably is what it is.
In the history of Gamay. And ever will be.
You deserve all the shit you give me off mic.
That's true.
Mic. You deserve it.
And how. What about yours? What's your red?
Well, I was actually thinking we were going to do Red last, but I'll go here. So mine's going to sound like an obvious pick for people, especially if you've seen Cup of Salvation. But when we start releasing things on SOM TV in February about what we went through to make this wine and probably what we're still going to go through, mine is the Milana wine from Cup of Salvation. It's the first. And by the way, cover your ears if you don't want any little tiny spoilers from Cup of Salvation. The journey is really what the film's about. And, you know, it's the first wine made in Iran since 1978. And Iran is a place that for thousands of years was a center of not just wine, but religion and numerous other things in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. It's a breadbasket still to this day. They had an Islamic revolution in 79. And if you're American or Canadian, this was a very big event for you. And no alcohol. So no wines. And they went from having 500 wineries to having none, essentially, in the next minute. And so I don't want to get into what happens in the movie, but this wine is a product of what happens in the back half of the film. Take that story away. The wine is fantastic. And I know you have a bottle of it you have not tried.
I think it's right there.
I will open up a bottle for you any second you come to my house.
So I'm just nervous to open it because it's this huge story and and it's I've never had an Iranian wine before.
Come over and we'll open one. Yeah, well, and it's from a grape called Rasha, which is an ancient red grape that exists in the northern part of Iran in the mountains. And it's just truly special. What does it taste like? I knew you were going to ask me that. This is a tough one.
I want to know.
Anybody who's, trying something that's like some indigenous varietal from Georgia or Armenia or wherever, you ultimately get asked this question. You're really pulling at straws. If it's a good varietal, if it's a really unique grape, you're pulling at straws. I mean, with this, I think it has an element of some Southern Rhone reds, but it's not anywhere near the same. It has also the winemaker was not involved in the growing season because of what happens. Again, you're going to want to see the film, but there's some winemaking to it. It was made by Amy Kushkarian and Vahe Kushkarian, who star in the film, and they are truly great winemakers. So I wonder in the hands of lesser winemakers what this would have been like, but this is a really well-made wine. So it just happens to be a wine that has a Southern Rhone sentiment, where it has a ripeness, but it's pulled back and has good acid, but it doesn't really compare to anything. I mean, it tastes like nothing I've ever had.
It looks pretty pale in the glass. Like, is it a lighter bodied wine or?
But yet it's bigger than you expect. So it's kind of like, you ever gone to pick up a gallon of milk and then there's like nothing in it? So your hand goes up really high, really fast. Like you think it's full. All right. That's what this is like. You look at it, it seems light, but then you drink it and you're like, whoa. And I don't mean big in a bad way. I mean, it's just got a lot. It's a much more complex wine than I was expecting when I first tasted it. And of course, I waited in fear and a lot of other emotions for this wine to end up in the bottle for a long time. It's really excellent. It is biased and unbiased. It is my favorite, and I think it's the best red I've tasted. And if you throw the story in, there's nothing.
It's even better.
I think this is the biggest thing that's happened in wine easily since the Judgment of Paris, but probably since the early 1900s. I mean, Judgment of Paris was not the event it actually is. And so it's truly one of the great things. And then luckily the wine lives up to it. So
would you say it's the greatest Rasha in the world that you've ever had?
I would say this is the greatest Rasha I've ever tasted.
Wow. That's a big statement.
It's a real hot take. I know. I'm coming in almost as hot as you were, Gamay Queen.
That's a no-brainer pick. That's probably the most so special amazing. Wine I've ever heard of. Yeah. Like, that's insane.
Well, you need to get over here and taste it because I know that that bottle that's behind you is not a holy relic. You need to drink it. Okay.
I know.
All right. Why don't we do our sparkling next? How do you feel about that?
Sure.
I think we have the same one, right?
We have to. I want you to introduce this one, though, because you were the first person in the United States to taste this wine. I got to taste it after the fact. So for you, this was pretty important, pretty up there.
Well, it's crazy. So I got this call from a guy by the name of Jacob Gregg, and he reps Cottle Bosco. And he's a good friend in the wine business, and he's based in Atlanta. And he calls me. He's like, so there is this sparkling wine, and Cottle Bosco is a wine – it's a Franciacorta from Northern Italy. Delicious, delicious wines. Really some of the great sparklings coming out of Europe. Okay. And we love their wines. They're part of Sparklers. They make a really, really unique group of wines. And we love them. Mm-hmm. Their Anna Maria Clemente in particular is one of the great sparkling wines of all time. I mean, it's just great. Oh, yeah. Okay. So he calls me up. He's like, well, we had this thing in the year 1980. Maurizio Zanella, who runs Cattle Bosco, one of the founders, he did this experiment believing that his wines were good enough to last and age for a really long time. So in 1980, he makes this wine, his Anna Maria Clemente, their top shelf stuff, but he left it on the lees for 42, 43 years. Now, 1980 is my birth year. And he just calls and goes, would you be interested in doing something with Somme TV?
You're like, and, yes.
I was like, yeah, absolutely. This is just a phenomenal opportunity. I couldn't believe it. So this thing sat, I forget the terminology, but point down, there's a term for that where they pupitre? Store it. I'm not sure.
But on the point down. Pupitre. Yeah.
And then basically the lees for 43 years were blocking the cork. And right. So not only was it on the lees, it wasn't sitting sideways. It was down, pointed down. And so there's this interesting thing that when we popped this, and yeah, I was the first person in North America to try it, which was mind-boggling. I don't know why I got that honor, but you were there. And so when he popped it, I was really, really, really blown away. And there's an episode on Somme TV where I drink this and I look like I'm like a fan of NSYNC and I'm finally sitting down with NSYNC. Like I was like really, really excited about this wine, but it was genuine. It was, I don't know why 100%. NSYNC was my comp there, but.
Not but a Backstreet really, Boys guy?
Probably not. It was really, really, really unique and delicious. And the acid in it, first of all, it didn't taste as old as it was for one, but I say that in a good way because I do like age on bubbles a lot.
Sure.
But there was such a lack of oxidation. And then he told me the reason is it sat this way with the cork pointed down and had the yeast further blocking the oxidation. Yeah. So
it becomes like a plug.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you think of this wine? How would you have described this wine? 43
years
on the lees.
I was also very surprised, which is, you know, kind of unheard of. Nobody does that. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, great champagne houses that do extended lees aging, but usually the age is coming in the bottle after the fact, you know, after you've already purchased it and you're laying it down in your cellar for, you know, however many decades. So it changes everything for it to be on the lees that long. And I guess I didn't really think about that it would create that plug because when he first poured that wine, and also you could hear the carbonate, you know, the little pfft when he opens it, usually with like old sparkling, you don't have much of that left. So I was already like, okay, that's kind of cool. And then you see it getting poured into the glass and I was, you know, sitting off to the side behind the camera watching this happen. And the color was like this beautiful, like brilliant gold color, but it wasn't ambered at all. It didn't have any of that oxidation, like you mentioned. I was shocked by how youthful the color was. Just, I was so excited to try it from the moment I saw it poured into the glass and then like watching you experience it. I was just like, cut the cameras already. I want to taste this thing. And it was again, just so much more primary notes, so much more carbonation, so much more lifted and fresh than I expected a 40-something-year-old bottle of sparkling to be because they left it on the lees like that for so long. But lovely, like wonderful texture. Holy crap, like all the brioche, the marzipan, but it had all that lift of the acid still and the carbonation and all the beautiful, there were still primary fruit notes in there, which was just kind of crazy to me. You know, it wasn't like a baked stewed
It was confusing, right? I mean, the wine was confusing in the way that it tasted.
I would never have blind tasted it as a 1980 bottle of sparkling.
No, but you know what I would have said? This is a, I don't know about expensive as the terminology, but this is a very well-made, very something special and likely expensive. Because when you taste it, you're like, well, there's too much going on here. I probably would have gone to Champagne, to be honest with you. I mean,
for sure.
I don't know who can call 43-year-old Franciacorta on the lees. But yeah, that's my right. Number one sparkling, hands down. There's not even...
I have to agree with that.
All right, what did you have? Did you have a white?
I did. We drank some good white wines in Aspen, I will say, but it was really fun. The first night that we got there, we went to a Mayakamis party. Yeah. And
this is Aspen Food Wine Classic. Yep.
Classic. And Braden the winemaker was there and pouring some really cool back vintage, you know, stuff, including a Pinot Noir, which was really cool. I can't remember the vintage on that. I don't know. Do you remember that one?
I believe it was.
It was like.
Might have been the 80s, I think.
It might have been the 80s.
Early 90s. I don't remember. I drank quite a bit of it, actually.
It was delicious. And I think that was in Magnum. So he's pouring all these wines, and there's a lovely, what was it, 2005 Chardonnay in Magnum? Mm-hmm. I think it was.
That's right.
Yep. And that was delightful. I can't. Yeah, I'm looking back. That was awesome. And that's one of those other instances where you just have to smile and like kind of step out of your body for a moment and be like, I'm at Aspen Food and Wine with Somme TV, and Braden Albrecht is pouring me the 2005 Mayakama Chardonnay. Like, this is really cool. I'm really, really lucky. And it was delicious. You know, we had a lovely dinner. It's all those little pieces that come together to help make that wine special. Although, as we know, Mayakama's is pretty incredible on its own.
So I think that's a great pick. I mean, obviously, you can watch any. God, do we have so much stuff on Mayakama's on the platform? So
yeah,
but yeah, that wine was great. I'm glad you picked that because it's a wine that people can actually get. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's not. I mean, maybe you're not be able to get the 05, but you know, that's not also that old. No, but that's kind of like in a really interesting place for Chardonnay, where it's got, you know, 10, 13, 15 years of age, but it's also not so old that the age takes
it's
over
more.
The flavor.
It's 2023,
profile.
Jason. It's like an 18-year-old Chardonnay.
Oh, fuck. What year is it
it's,
right now?
I know. It's older than you think it is. I see 05, and I don't think so either, but it's older than you think it is. I know.
Oh, my
it's
God. Almost you're right.
24. Yeah. It's older.
I was thinking
But that's
15.
Okay. You're like 10 years old, and I'm like, uh-huh.
Oh, I wish I was 10 years old in 05. I was older than that, sadly. But oh boy. Yeah, that was a great situation. Yeah. Obviously, Mayakama's really brings the library of wines. My white is a simple one. It is simple when it was released. This is just a Muscadet. And it's a 97 Muscadet. And people don't think that this wine. Well, people just don't think it ages. I mean, I think it's like, or they just don't care to age it often.
Yeah.
When I made the first film, 13 years ago or so, started shooting it, Muscadet was kind of this hot thing, but it was really cheap. I mean, you can get a bottle, and I think you still can get a good bottle of Muscadet for like 12, 15 bucks.
Oh, yeah.
So somebody has a cellar, and they broke out a 97 Clos de Briords Muscadet that was kind of like a forgotten wine. It wasn't like they packed it away and were like, this is going to be great in the future. But there's something about wines that have very little besides the acid as their character when they're released. You know, there's some Rieslings like this. There's a lot of Muscadets like this. Mm-hmm. And then when you put that kind of age on them, you know, they turn into this very interesting, mellowed out flavors that would never have existed, you know, kind of thing. They have, they almost have like a, it's very strange because skin contact is the only thing that I can relate to this. They almost have like a feeling of like the grape tannic type thing that comes out in these wines after many, many years, because
that's
all you get is acid, a little bit of fruit. And obviously on colder vintages, cooler vintages, this is, you know, in the Loire, this is more of a thing. But to me, you get this kind of like richness that I would associate with skin contact. Mm-hmm. Or things like that, that you just don't taste. Obviously, it oxidizes a little bit, things like
that.
Still great with oysters, still really acidic.
I was going to ask.
Yeah, but more balanced kind of thing. So this is like a wine that
that's not,
it's the classic, not expensive when released, but, you know, really good if you put it away. And that's why.
It's all those fun, unexpected things. Who would have thought?
Yeah. Why to put this in the wild card, but my wild card wine is so nuts. And it's also a bit of the future of a film we have coming in the spring. So, Yeah. So I would have put this there, but it just goes to show you don't necessarily have to be spending tons of money. You just have to be thinking outside the box and a little bit of insider trading.
Dangerous.
Muscadet. That's a
live dangerously in Adrian Muscadet.
Live dangerously. We both did our white. Now we have our wild card. Do you want to do yours?
Yeah.
You want me to jump in? Yeah, you do yours first.
Yeah, because then you can set up all the cool stuff that's coming to Somme TV. And so mine is this. Yeah, this is really cool. So there was a Madeira tasting convention, if you will, recently here in Los Angeles. A Madeira convention.
Did you wear your Madeira hat? Tasting, you know?
Like, if I had one, I would. Are you kidding me? Like
I know you love Madeira. We have episodes about Madeira on Somme TV.
I'm a slut for Madeira. I love Madeira.
If you don't wear a hat to the next convention that says Madeira slut, then you're not 2024 was not a win. You need to do
that. I don't want to stir up any controversy, but yeah. Madeira. So it was this lovely, huge tasting, lots of classes and stuff like that. And I happened to be friends with the wine director of the program that was at the location that this was taking place at, a beautiful hotel in Beverly Hills. And he had some sneaky stuff in the back that they weren't out on the tables. They had some older stuff on the tables.
It's like the champagne room?
Yeah, that sounds creepy. I need to fix this. As we know, Madeira can age for quite a long time. So you go back, you know, there are some, I haven't had the pleasure yet, but there are some from the 1700s that you can drink that are still sound. What are you grabbing up there?
I have a bottle.
What the heck?
That was imported in 1824.
That's cool.
That we drank this on Somme TV. This is there's a drinker bottle of this. So
you drank it on Somme TV.
It was probably made in the 1700s, but imported in
1824. That's cool. That is cool.
But anyways, you're absolutely right. It is it's a really, 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 it's just insane. What's the oldest you had, by the way? Is this the oldest you're about to say?
I think, no. The oldest I've had is also like 1820s.
Okay.
And that was a friend who brought the bottle into town and was kind enough to share.
Wow.
And that was crazy too, just because you'd think that aged Madeira, like it would taste like markedly older than some more recent years. But honestly, like it holds up. That stuff still tastes incredibly fresh, but it just gets even more complex and rich and fabulous.
It really does.
So yes, we went to the wine office, and on the table was this beautiful lineup of like early 1900s to late 1800s. Madeiras. And it was all, I can't remember the producer, D'Oliveiras, I think, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe. And it was an 1890 Verdello.
Wow.
I love Verdello in general. It's the grape. And generally, it has like a little residual sugar on it. It's not as dry as a Sertial, but it doesn't get quite as rich or sweet as a Boal or a Malvasia. And it's just so cool. And also just to like, these time capsules, like wine, I love the history. I love the story. I think that's something that attracts a lot of people to it. And it's this time capsule. 1890. Yeah. Like, think about what was happening in the world then. Who was still alive?
The,
you know, all these.
Yeah, it's the last time the Browns won the Super Bowl, I believe.
Jesus.
We're in the championship. It was a bit ago.
Are you
ago.
From Ohio?
Sorry. At these screenings, everyone's been giving me shit. They're like, everyone who listens to the pod, they're like, we drink whenever you mention your mom's the only one listening, or when you mention you're from Cleveland. I'm like, oh, you must be drinking a lot.
You're welcome. You can finally
anyways, take 1890. I'm sorry. That was a totally self-egregious.
That's a good one. That's a good one. But yeah, no, just fantastic. Lovely time capsule of, you know, when the Browns were successful, of course, the important stuff. Going on.
Half the audience
the late
just clicked off. They're like, I'm out.
Know,
this guy is obnoxious. I can't help it. All right.
No.
But when it comes to Madeira, unfortunately, mm-hmm. it used to be one of these wines that you could get these truly old vintages. And they're kind of hard to get now. They're very expensive.
Yeah. They're starting to get more popular.
I will say Rivas Alta is still a chance.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's not promote that because then we'll have a problem. Rivas Salts from South.
No.
Yeah, right.
Well, no. That's Will.
All right. So
it's great.
My wild card
yes.
will do really fast. And this will be like this is our last of the favorite, best, most impactful wines of 2023.
Indeed.
Mine is, guys, I'm picking a Prosecco. If you had told me on my bingo card that one of my favorite, best, most important wines of a year anywhere would be a Prosecco.
Huh.
I wouldn't have believed it. It's not that I have anything against Prosecco. It's just that, you know, those are chill, easy drinking things, you know, and some are quite good. I mean, Prosecco Superiore can be great, you know, whatever. So the point is though, we are filming a film that was along the lines of what Cup of Salvation was supposed to be. And I'm not going to get too deep into it, but it's a very, very epic movie. Takes place in, I believe, 12 countries, 11 countries, something like that. It's
That's a lot of countries.
Yeah. Well, so we filmed in the Vatican, and we were in the secret archives. It took me 5 years or so to get permission to be able to do this. I don't know of anyone else who's ever done it. We're looking for a document from, I believe, like just around the year 1500. And so we found it took them weeks to find this document. We went to Rome. We filmed this document. What we found on this document brought us to Venice, Italy in the film. The film that's coming, and it's currently titled Life of Wine, coming in the spring. So we end up in Venice. We're there for about a week and a half, and we're there for this monastery. So there is a monastery in Venice called San Francesco della Vigna. And it has that name because it's the only place in the Venice proper, like within the city, that has a vineyard, like on the islands.
That's crazy.
Essentially, you know, with canals and everything. They have two vineyards, one planted to Malvasia and one planted to Glera, which is, as a lot of people listening know, what they use to make, you know, Prosecco. So anyways, the Prosecco that they make at this monastery is incredible, but the story of how it fits in to the story of wine as a whole and the idea of wine becoming a commercial product and all of these things is why I had to pick this wine. I'm being very careful about describing this because there's not a lot I can say without spoiling this future film. They make this wine from, and you talk about terroir. When you're talking about terroir, you're talking about dirt. But in Venice, you don't have that much dirt. You know, these are sort of like, these are, they're not all, you know, look, some of them are actual islands in Venice. Some of them are sort of created islands in Venice, the process of which does not allow a lot of space for dirt. And so this wine is really, really unique and really, really special. And it is one where the story of what happens with this wine, why it exists, you know, the fact that it even exists. And, you know, it's just such a part of what you're drinking that I had to put this on the list. And because it happened in 2023, where we filmed and all the stuff, I had to put it on this list. All of you listening will be able to watch this. And yes, Cup of Salvation is coming digitally. I know you're like, don't announce another movie when I haven't seen your other one. But it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
That's cool. I can't wait to see that. I would love to taste that one.
A Prosecco from San Francesco della Vigna in Venice, Italy.
I have so many questions.
Yeah. Well,
so many questions.
You feeling good about 2024?
The greatest Prosecco ever made.
The greatest.
Heck yeah, let's go. ever made. Greatest Prosecco, greatest Russia, greatest
Gourmet. Oh, boy.
All the best.
Oh, boy. I love it.
Yeah, 2024 is going to be awesome. I'm excited because we have a lot of really cool stuff coming.
We do.
Next year.
We have a lot of great stuff. Stuff we've been promising for a long time that is actually coming, thankfully. Well, Claire, I want to thank you so much for bringing your list here and sharing it.
Thank you. And hey, we shared a lot of these wines together, so that's always a pleasure.
Yeah. Also, I would like some residuals on the Madeira slot hats. I think those are going to go big.
Actually, I think they'd be really cute.
Yeah. Really cute. Well, let's see it. Hit Claire up on social media for your Madeira slot hat. And I wish everybody a very, very happy 2024 and one filled with good wine. And I hope everyone's nice to you on New Year's Eve. We will talk soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I really, really appreciate it. Please let us know what your favorite and best wines of the year was. Hit us up on social media at SomTVStreaming or at Som_films on Instagram. I want to thank Claire Copey for being on today's podcast and John Adams for producing. If you love our podcast, please give us a great review wherever you listen to your podcasts. As I say, it means a lot and it really, really helps us out. And don't forget the 2023 vintage for Napa Valley is shaping up to be one of the best vintages in recent history. Go to somtv.com to watch the vintage report from the 2023 vintage with some of the great winemakers of Napa as they describe why this vintage is so special. And if you want to learn more about the 2023 harvest and any other harvest, go to napavintners.com and you can find everything you need to know there. Okay, everybody, please have a great, happy new year. Drink something fantastic and we will see you in 2024.